man. Is that Freedom Rock?
Yeah, man.
Well, turn it up, man.
Freedom Rock and Liberty on the air. Coming to you over the AM 680, the Big 68 WRKO, the voice of Boston. You can join the conversation tonight calling us 617-266-6868. If you're on the live stream on Facebook, we are looking forward to hearing your conversation as it adds to ours, because we are talking about the hot topic, the one that we have laid off on for a couple of weeks because it might have been too hot. But today we're going to talk guns. We're going to talk guns in the United States. We're going to talk about the shooting that happened in Florida. We're going to talk about the shooting that just happened in the VA. We're going to talk about the teacher in Plymouth, Massachusetts, who was just suspended because his student said, "I'm going to find the answers to the test somewhere." And the teacher responded, "You're not going to find them because they're at my home in my safe next to my gun." I don't know why that would cause someone to be suspended. But before we can have any conversation about guns in the United States, we should first talk about the fact that we have an amendment that states what the rights are that Americans have that the government shall not infringe upon. And it's important to say that, you know, these are not rights that are given to you by government. The implication is that your rights belong to you. They are inalienable. And there are specific things it says the government will not infringe upon your rights. And since we have our resident Constitution reader in the house, Matt McLaughlin.
I'm here.
Good. Matt, could you give us the text of the Second Amendment, please?
Of course. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
So, sometimes I think that when the Second Amendment is read aloud, we should do the Victor Borgia for periods and commas. Because there's a lot of argument about the commas.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I think one should, and I hope I was on the mic well enough for that last reading for that. That is one sentence.
Right.
I mean, it is, there's all sorts of commas that people, you know, some actors might just blow right through or ignore or whatever. But like, yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting, I mean, the phrasing of it is.
Right. And so I understand what you're saying. There is a point that the Second Amendment has been open to a bunch of different interpretations, and I can tell you that I have a specific interpretation that I know for a fact Ken thinks is wrong.
Oh, so fantastic.
Yep, but I'm going to say it anyway. So my argument is that in the Second Amendment, the phrase, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of the free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms should not be infringed. In my opinion, the Constitution, James Madison writing the Second Amendment, is specifically talking about two different groups of people. The militia, which is everybody who bears arms in service to the government. And remember, at the time that it's written, there aren't really any policemen. They're just soldiers who keep order. You know, a famous example right here in Boston during the Boston Massacre, it was soldiers who were supposed to keep order who fired into the crowd. As we know now, soldiers are particularly poorly suited to keeping law and order within the city. All that being said.
But side note, I actually think that most of our policemen should be trained more like soldiers. I think that's sort of a side note. I think that might be one of the problems with some of the police shootings, but that's a different sort of thing.
I would strongly disagree with that because I think that there's a difference between law enforcement officers and peacekeepers.
I don't want to get off. Oh, no, that I agree with. I don't want to get off on a tangent on this, but I'm thinking that the training that soldiers have when they're pulling a gun and when they're the sort of danger that they see.
There's certainly something to that.
Yeah, that's a different story. So let's continue with this.
My point of the Second Amendment is the Second Amendment very clearly says that there are two groups of people, the militia, who are everybody who carries an arm.
Some would say that they are necessary to the security of a free state.
Well, the point, my point is that the militia represents all the people who bear arms in the service of government, mainly soldiers, some sheriffs. But the point is that those people have to be well regulated. And if they are not well regulated, the security of a free state is threatened. The only people who can regulate the militia are the other groups of people, which it says the right of the people. So a well-regulated militia, the right of the people to keep and bear arms in order to keep them regulated, shall not be infringed. That's always been my interpretation.
I would agree with that, but there's a different interpretation. I would like to hear that. I would like to.
Yeah, I mean, that's the intellectually wrong interpretation.
Exactly.
Because the term well-regulated has a very clear definition in the 1700 lexicon. It means in proper working condition. And simply, the first clause of that statement literally only means to keep a militia in proper working order. We need people to keep and bear arms. And you were kind of tangentially correct on the part about the militia. It is talking about two distinct groups, and that is true.
Okay, that's what I was sort of agreeing
with. The militia is well-defined, actually, in the literature from the time, though. The militia was defined to be all able-bodied men 18 years or older. And so the militia was made up of the people, but they wanted to be clear that the right is extended to the people, and it's not contingent on membership in any militia of any kind.
Okay, so maybe I misunderstood then, because I was sort of, Dan may have faked me out there. I do sort of see that as sort of, not only two separate things, but there are two ideas, two clauses. That, you know, there is a well-regulated militia, which Ken nicely expounded what that meant, which there was a first comment sort of hint at what it really means, being necessary to security of a free state, comma, the right of the people to keep and bear arms. I think the people and the militia are, it's not just for a militia, I think is what I'm saying.
So the interesting thing about that is that, you know, we already have an argument about the meaning of the Second Amendment.
Well,
that being said,
there's no argument amongst intellectually honest individuals. People will try to bend facts to try to use it against certain arguments.
But, and I honestly don't think our argument is that different. I mean, Dan, do you think it means a militia and the people, the other non-militia?
Ken's intellectually honest interpretation is that the militia is actually the body of soldiers who can be called up at a moment's notice.
Well, this is also important to remember in the time that the leadership of the day, you know, warned strongly against standing armies. So the only way you fight off an offending army is by raising the militia.
Right, the ability to call people up. I mean, it was
general people.
It's almost the National Guard of the day. You know, if you look at some of the actions that happened in the day,
Minuteman.
Right, exactly. The rebellions that took place, there were always armories around that were stocked, filled with guns. So the idea that they could ring the bell and the militia would show up. Exactly. So, but fortunately, our interpretations and everybody else's interpretation don't matter so much. Because it's true, the Supreme Court has had a very definitive ruling on this. And this is really the law of the land at this point in time.
I am gobsmacked to find out that my interpretation is not the law of the land.
It's called the Heller case, but really it's the District of Columbia versus Heller. And in that, the Supreme Court held in a 5-4 decision, the Second Amendment protects an individual right to possess a firearm unconnected with service in a militia for traditionally lawful purposes, such as self-defense within the home. And the reason this came about was Washington, D.C., which had a tremendous handgun violence issue, passed a law.
Well, they have a violence issue.
You have a violence issue. Exactly right. Right. And but there were a lot of shootings at that point.
A murder issue. Yeah.
Exactly. They thought that they would control it. And they said that all handguns would be illegal in Washington, D.C., and that lawfully owned rifles.
Well, not all.
Well, it was a ban on handguns.
Did the Secret Service turn in their firearms?
No, it was a ban on...
On me, not thee.
Yes. What about the security for congressmen?
Right. So people who... Exactly right. You're right.
No, the special people get special privileges.
Right. But if you wanted... But if you actually...
Is that the Fifth Amendment? Sixth Amendment? Yes. What amendment is that?
Well, as a matter of fact, Matt, you're mentioned specifically for being banned from owning a handgun. It's one of the few cases...
How did they know?
But also... It said that all lawfully owned rifles and shotguns had to be kept unloaded and disassembled or bound by a trigger lock.
Disassembled?
Yep, exactly right.
And yeah, I just made a Johnny Five reference, Short Circuit, for any of you listeners who were older than me.
That's good.
Watch movies in the 80s.
So, Heller is the law of the land. And it's an important concept because what we used to talk about, whether or not there was a militia requirement, and people had debated that for a long time, that's not relevant anymore. The Supreme Court has said in their interpretation of it, the Second Amendment specifically says you have the right to bear arms. You have right to bear arms in the form that you deem appropriate. However, SCOTUS also said that there is an ability for the government to provide some regulations for guns. And they said specifically as well that the right to bear arms is not unlimited and that the regulation is reasonable. They didn't say which regulation, but they said that there is potentially an interest for the government to have some forms of regulation. And we have some forms of regulation today. As an example, if I want to go out and buy a gun from a licensed gun dealer, he or she has to look up my information to find out whether or not they can sell me a handgun. Now, in order to do that, I have to have an FID card.
Only in certain states.
Only in certain states, but in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Right. Firearms identification card. That's how they are able to look me up to find out whether or not they can sell me a gun. Which leads us to gun misconception number one that I want to address. A lot of times you'll hear people say, we've got to close the gun show loophole. We have to close the gun show loophole. There's a loophole at gun shows.
Dan, what is the gun show loophole?
A made-up term?
It is a made-up term. Well, it's not
a catchy tune.
Exactly. It's catchy because people say, oh, loophole. There's a loophole. Everybody likes a loophole.
Everyone loopholes likes to close loopholes.
Exactly right. However, here's what the law says. The law says that to regulate the sale of guns, the government has the right to make sure that everybody who is actually selling guns professionally, everybody who is a gun seller, has to make sure that the person they sell the gun to is allowed to buy a gun, that they're not on a list somewhere, something like that. However, in establishing these rules, the government also said specifically that a regular transaction between two guys who just know each other, they have no right to regulate that. So if I'm not a gun seller, okay, but I happen to have a gun and I want to sell it to you, totally okay. I don't have to look up.
Which semantically, by definition, makes you a gun seller.
So it doesn't because, according to the definition.
Well, it doesn't make it. It's not your trade.
Exactly. And so the ATF has actually written about this specifically and said that selling one gun, you would never be considered a gun seller. If you sold two guns, but you were selling guns for a significant amount of profit. So, for example, if I searched the world and I found, this very rare gun and then I sold it for $1 million and then I did it again, I sold another gun for $1 million. I'm a gun seller, even though I'm only selling two. On the other hand, if I happen to be a hunter and, I have five rifles and I take my buddies out to they learn how to shoot and I sell one to each one of them, I'm not really a gun seller at that point in time. I sold two or three guns. So there is a degree of interpretation.
What do people mean when they say, what is the idea? What are they trying to bring up? I know we're coming up on a break, but...
Gun show, if you want, again, going back to the intellectually honest, at least if we can get to that, then we can have a fair debate. But the intellectually honest term for it would be the private sale loophole. You could say private sales are not subject to federal background.
But that's, I think you guys are getting like a step or two ahead. I think sort of my question is what is colloquial meant when someone says the gun show? They're trying to evoke an
image,
right?
They're saying, yeah, okay. So they're trying to evoke an emotional response to the idea of people being able to buy firearms without any kind of checks or balances at gun shows that they couldn't buy from a gun dealer in a store.
Right. So if I go, never been to a gun show. I don't.
So normally what happens at a gun show?
Usually there's a lot of overpriced guns. There's no good deals.
Do people sell?
Yes. For sure.
Obviously people sell guns at a gun show.
They're not like, just showing them.
It's not your type of gun show.
Yeah. But
Matt's flexing in the audience right now. He's taking his shirt off. Folks, I'm glad this is radio.
Well, I didn't have pants on to begin with because it's radio. So, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Again, I don't know, but a lot of these people are licensed gun sellers that might be selling 5, 10, 20, 100 guns or hoping to because that's their business.
So
but,
any dealer in attendance.
But when I hear the gun show loophole means that I can go to a gun show and,
what they're trying to imply, and this may happen
that anyone
sometimes
at a gun show can buy any gun without being background checked.
This may happen sometimes is that a lot of the people who go to gun shows, in addition to being collectors, may have a gun that they want to part with so that they could buy something else. And if that happens and I happen to be there in and I have a gun in the trunk and I want to sell it to you, the government's position is they have no right to regulate a private transaction between you and me. Course, I am not a licensed.
Of course, that being the federal government.
That being the federal government, exactly. You know,
Massachusetts has certain restrictions on that too.
Exactly right. And then also, I think one another thing that causes a great amount of distinction is that not a lot of people know what the difference is between the state law and the federal law. And the state law varies so much that you need a dictionary to figure it out. And so we're going to go get that dictionary right after the break. Everywhere. You can listen to WRKO Everywhere. You can call us at 617-266-6868. We are talking guns, America, gun control, and we got Skippy calling in from South Boston. Skippy, thanks for calling in. How's it going?
Hello, fellas. Listen, I can make 2 points, please.
Yep.
I'd like to talk about those private sales on guns.
Okay.
But first, as far as the First Amendment, I'm telling you, I'm amazed. And if anybody, if they could read the Constitution, Bill of Rights, the First Amendment, it's all about what our freedoms are, our expression and religion, what makes us what we are. And you say inalienable rights. Well, that means it comes from God. And it's just the fact that we're born, we have these rights.
Exactly right.
They said, so we're going to harness that, and no one's going to impede on that. And the thing that protects the First Amendment is the Second Amendment. Because let's get rid of the Second Amendment. If there was never a Second Amendment, we get of all the free...
The you got, you're 100% free, right, Skippy.
And then we go into the Third, now the Fourth Amendment. Protection against our invasion into our houses and private papers where they could warrantless searches and all that. The Second Amendment, if we didn't have that, none of it's worth a damn.
Completely agree.
Yep.
Don't get us in trouble now, with the FCC, though.
All right.
I'm just kidding.
I'll tell you right now. Private sales. There's no such thing as a private... What's a private sale? Say Dan Fishman likes the 357 I don't want anymore.
Yep.
He's going to want to buy it from me. All right. All right, Dan. Let me see your license to carry. All right. I'm going to write that in a minute. It's almost like you're doing a sale of a house in his mind. And we have to still fill out a form and submit it to the state because Dan Fisher might like my gun, but it has a number on it that's embedded into that comes back. It's almost like a fingerprint to me. I'm saying he now has my fingerprint, and I want to let you know that he has it in case Dan loses his mind and starts shooting everybody, and let somebody have to know that I sold it to him on March the 10th. So there's no such thing as a private sale in the sense that no one knows about it. It has to be all regulated. And as far as that with the militia,
mm-hmm.
the militia is all right. We call it the National Guard.
Yeah.
But still, they are regulated by the government. So the governor is the guy that says, so the governor may say, hey, I don't like what they're talking about in the First Amendment. Let's put the National Guard on them. That's why we have to have another arm of it that, no, you will not, because we all can protect ourselves against you going crazy.
Yeah, and those are outstanding points, Skippy. Thank you, Mitch.
I got a quick question for Skippy. Skippy, you excited for the parade next week?
By the way, Skippy can call back and we'll talk about the parade later. But you've got any hot takes on 2A, you can give us a call at 617-266-6868.
Yeah, thanks very much, Matt. Matt.
What Skippy said was totally true for Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
So that in a sense, there is actually no such thing as a private sale loophole in Massachusetts. But yeah, in most of the United States, in Texas, Alaska, you could go to a garage sale and purchase a pistol off somebody.
So let me ask you this.
No,
you and I go out to the range and here in Massachusetts and you're shooting a gun and you say, hey, what do you think about this? And I try it out. I like it. I want to buy it from you right now. You have to file a form?
With the state, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Because the state of Massachusetts regulates all transfers of firearms. And so essentially they maintain this database that keeps track of every time a firearm is transferred within the state. And they try to say it's not registration, even though it's essentially that's what it is. You're required by Mass law. State law to record the license number of the person you're transferring it to and all the information about the firearm.
So that's an interesting thing. When we talk about state laws and changing things, I know that recently Maura Healey redefined what the state law was in terms of what is an assault rifle.
Yeah, well, I mean, her stance was that she reinterpreted an existing law the correct way, mm-hmm. that it should have been the whole time. That's so how she's getting around
her implication
kind of
was that Martha Coakley, Deval Patrick, Right. They all got it wrong.
Exactly.
She knows better.
For 20 years, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, and so essentially what it is that there are certain aspects that can be on a gun, like a sight or a flash suppressor.
Yeah, so Massachusetts has a statewide assault weapons ban that they adopted, codified into law before the federal assault weapons ban expired. And what that does is ban AR-15s and other similar rifles based on cosmetic features that are attached to the rifle.
Right.
What is an assault rifle?
Well, assault rifle is different than assault weapon, which is part of the confusion that politicians have created.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of – I mean, I think – you know, this is a conversation I think.
And an assault rifle is a select fire weapon that can shoot automatic, and those are what soldiers use overseas to fight ISIS. Those are assault rifles.
Right.
The term assault weapon was invented by politicians to murky the waters, to make people think that weapons that people owned in the United States were the same thing as assault rifles by calling them assault weapons. But an assault weapon, in terms of 1998 law, assault weapons ban that was passed federally bans rifles based on things that are attached to it. It has nothing to do with how it functions or its rate of fire or anything like that.
And just to be clear, so, you know, gun control is something that we have a long history of in the United States. It's 1934, right? It's when they ban machine guns, right? The Weapons Act of 1934. I'm putting you on the spot for the year, but it's back in the days.
Well, the Gun Control Act of 1968 was, I believe, the last was when the federal law changed to make it illegal to, 1986.
Right.
Yeah.
But 1934 is, it's specifically in response to prohibition. If you ever seen
the National Firearms Act?
National Firearms Act, exactly.
Yeah, that did not ban the owning of what's called Class 3 firearms or fully automatic machine guns.
Right.
What that did was put a federal tax stamp requirement of $200 on each one of those items.
Interesting, which is a lot in 1937.
And so by the time 1986 rolls around, $200 is not what it used to be.
Right.
And then they passed the Gun Control Act. What that did was make it illegal to own any fully automatic weapons that were manufactured after that date, unless you're a bona fide manufacturer or dealer.
Well, so there are people in Massachusetts who have Class 3 licenses. I was just talking to somebody down.
Absolutely.
What's the difference in a license? What is a Class 1, Class 2, Class 3,
Class 12? We're going into the weeds a little bit.
Okay.
But, right.
Just to specify, to get a Class 3 license, would be a legitimate machine gun, not anybody can do that.
Anyone can do it if you're willing to put in the extreme amount of effort to do it.
Right.
Anyone could do it.
Okay.
But similar to the Massachusetts license to carry and FID, there is a little bit of leniency given to the chief of police in your town to have discretion over that.
Right.
So there's nothing legally keeping you from trying to get this license.
Are these federal license requirements?
This is a state license.
Oh, the Class 3? No, I don't really know. I mean,
it's very convoluted. This is a Massachusetts requirement I'm talking about.
But
to have a machine gun.
So it is a great example of those sort of how a lot of the confusion, a lot of when we're trying to have a rational conversation, it's difficult because a lot of the terms are varied.
To clarify, if you live in a state like Texas or Alaska or something like that, you just need to file the federal paperwork. You have to apply for a tax stamp and then have it approved by your local chief of police. It goes to the ATF.
Yep.
You wait 6 months. They approve it. That allows you to now go purchase that one firearm that you have authorization to do so.
So,
but Massachusetts adds an extra layer where you need to have a machine gun license to legally possess it within the state of Massachusetts.
Interesting.
So what do you mean by machine gun? There's a part of me that wants to get sort of
I mean, these are questions.
I'm getting in the weeds, and I want to make sure that, we're not, and I don't really understand. I mean, when I hear machine gun, I think of what the A-team used and stuff like that, and not to say they weren't.
That's not a crazy thing.
I think what happens in some of these conversations when these tragedies happen and people talk about this, I think there's a lot of, I don't know if it's misinformation, it's at least wrong information.
It is a great misinformation because one of the things that people talk about, if we talk about Pulse nightclub shooting or the other shooting in Florida that just happened, the Parkland shooting, people talk about the fact that, it's a semi-automatic weapon. But what most people don't realize is that most of the pistols that you see being fired are also semi-automatic. Essentially, you fire a bullet as quickly as you can shoot the trigger. And one of the misconceptions that I wanted to talk about is in having this kind of people say, You know, nobody needs an AR. An assault, AR stands for armor light. It doesn't stand for assault rifle. Nobody needs an AR-15 because it's only used for killing people. So, simple facts. Anybody can right now go look on Google, AR-15.
Or Bing. Weren't firearms coyote. Designed to inflict damage upon people and other living things? That's their purpose.
It's a fascinating question. I mean,
is that not their purpose?
I think
so. That's not a valid argument to say it's designed. That's what guns are designed to do.
Well, I would say specifically, pistols. A pistol has no other purpose than to shoot another human being. Nobody hunts with a pistol.
It's a self-defense. I mean, actually, that's not true either. Some people do hunt with. There actually is competitive pistol hunting, but that's kind of an aside.
Well, right. I did know that actually in the Olympics, the Americans won a bunch of gold in pistol shooting in the very first Olympics in 1896. But most pistols are not used for hunting. Pistols are primarily bought as a self-defense weapon,
yeah,
or absolutely. As a, you know, shoot up the neighborhood and drive-by weapon.
Or to get more flowers.
Or to get more flowers.
With stamens.
Yes, a little flower pistol joke. Outstanding work, Matt.
Not really. Sorry, it's late. Just want to make sure everyone's awake.
That's fine. But so one of
the... that joke's going to wake him up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's not going to put
him asleep. Or I was trying to put him asleep. I, you know, whatever.
But so when people talk about it, I was going to say, if you think ARs aren't used for hunting, just go Google AR-15 coyote, okay? In the West, coyotes are a real problem. The AR is, by my understanding from friends of mine who are ranchers, it is the ultimate in coyote killers.
And of course, it doesn't matter because the Second Amendment is not about hunting.
It's not.
That we covered that in the beginning of the show.
Okay. Right.
Did we mention hunting once? No.
No. So. But I want to talk about the misconception that the AR is not used for hunting. But you're right.
Right, but
that is not relevant to our conversation.
You're trying to go against their argument, but you need to say that argument doesn't even matter.
Right, because we don't care.
Instead of playing the defensive against the arguments out there that are saying, oh, it's not a hunting rifle, so you don't need it.
Now, I have heard...
Come back to the idea that it doesn't matter.
And maybe you guys...
That's actually a really good point.
I have heard some stuff that... I have heard said that the AR, you know, maybe it's good for killing coyotes, but it's not... And I could be getting this wrong, and obviously I'm not a gun expert, that it is sort of a... It is not generally... or maybe it's too powerful or not powerful enough for hunting the like the bigger game or whatever.
It's considered inhumane to use the AR-15 to hunt because it is such a low powered rifle compared to hunting rifles.
Right.
So if you shot a deer with an AR-15, well, it's
a low powered and high powered rifle.
Yeah, but basically the cartridge size and the charge within the cartridge that decides how fast the projectile leaves the chamber. And then the size of it, of course, has to do with the momentum and how much force it has when it impacts.
So is it better to have is that better or worse for humanely hunting?
You would want a larger caliber round because you'd want the animal not to suffer. You'd want it to die from one shot, right? So if you're hunting with a large caliber rifle, you would do that if you're hunting deer, for example.
So as an example, I mean, coyote's not a particularly big animal, but if you watch the coyote hunts, you'll see that the guys specifically talk about the fact that they want to make a very specific shot because they don't want the animal to suffer.
I think also with wild hogs in like certain states, they have a overpopulation of wild hogs.
Absolutely.
They're using AR-15.
Yeah, down in Texas, I have a wild hog called the javelina, and it's absolutely a tremendous pest. Destroys crops, but also, if people aren't familiar, feral pigs are incredibly dangerous to other animals and potentially to humans as well. So, yeah, absolutely. They hunt them with ARs because they're really good rifles.
So there is a purpose. I mean, not that it's...
But
Ken, there is a purpose to these sort of weapons that isn't just...
It's not just killing people. But Ken's point is actually...
But it's also great, an excellent self-defense weapon.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, because here's the thing about it is that, you know, so not to tell tales out of school, but for one of Matt's birthdays, we went to a shooting range in New Hampshire.
Yep.
And we shot...
I shot an AR.
We shot an AR and we shot a Glock 9mm. And the amazing thing about it was that...
not at each other. Let's just get that clear.
You're shooting at targets.
It was a Hamilton duel type right. situation.
Well, but the amazing thing was that at a range of 5 yards, about 50% of the people completely missed the target with the Glock. Now, 5 yards is not that far, right? I mean, they could have hit the target with a football if they'd thrown it.
I was amazed at how... Well, generically, everyone shot. I mean, I don't think anyone had really shot before. I had never shot a gun before. It's the only time I have. But I was sort of surprised at generically how well. But I mean, I also think, and it's obviously different to shoot to at a target than a,
yeah,
a living thing.
Well, there's no question about it. And, you know, there's a very interesting thing. Like, I mean, sometimes you'll see people,
it was also a moment where there was one guy who had, I believe it was, like a 9mm pistol, and he had an extended clip.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going, just looking, because he was at the range, and I didn't know who the guy was, and I'm like, what the hell is
magazine.
That? Magazine, that's the term. I'm like,
semantically.
Like, what is, I'm like, that just seems ludicrous. And then I realize this guy's out at the range, you know, for a limited time every, you know, week, whatever, that he doesn't want to change magazines every, you know, 9 or 10 shots or whatever it is. And like, he gets to, you know, practice more. And it's that to me, and I don't know if that's really his logic in it, was saying that, you know, people are like, the only reason you have an extended magazine is because you're going to, you know, you want to go through and kill more people and stuff like that. Because I know they're trying to, people want to ban those and the like.
Yeah. And, you know, it's an interesting question. But fundamentally, you know, Ken's argument, and I regret the fact now that I ever bothered to argue about whether or not something was a hunting rifle, because that's not what the Second Amendment is about. The Second Amendment has nothing to do with
hunting. No, you're right, but you're also trying to clarify. You're also trying to clarify misinformation that is spread. So
right.
Although, yes, you may have the right, but in order to convince people,
right.
I think, well, not, you're not necessarily convinced, but I think there is an education aspect to some of this that I think that, you know, people should hear, and I think it's good to learn what the difference is.
Yeah, and I think the key that you're talking about is education. I hope that we are providing a little bit of education about firearms in this show. AM 680 WRKO 617-266-6868. We are talking guns. We are talking gun control. We're talking about misconceptions, misinformation, and things that people don't really know and understand about guns. So I'm going to throw out some terms to Matt.
Sure.
And we'll see what you think I mean by those. All right. Revolver. What do you think a revolver is?
I believe my understanding is a revolver is generally generally 6 or 8. It's a gun that is, I believe it is either, I think it's called double action. You need to do two things, and there's a cylinder that revolves.
I would say that is 100% correct. What do you think, Ken?
It's an album by the Beatles. I could have sworn that's what you're going to say.
I know. Well,
but yeah, a wheel gun is
wheel. That would be, I think I was trying to stretch. I don't know what it is.
Right.
But was I right on the? I know there is a difference between what is known as a single action and a double action.
Yeah. So actually, I can explain that real quick. Yeah. So if say you loaded up your revolver with all 6 or 8 rounds or 5 rounds or whatever, depending on the caliber, if you don't cock the hammer. As you pull the trigger back, the hammer goes back, and then when you get to the break point, the hammer goes forward. That would be double action. So the action of pulling the trigger, both cocks the hammer and then fires. If you pull the hammer back, you're now in single action, where you're just pulling the trigger up the slack of actually firing the shot.
So a revolver, if the hammer isn't pulled back, I can pull the trigger and it will do both actions? Like an old style Western?
It becomes a lot harder because you have to, you have to take up the force of pulling back the hammer with your finger instead of with your thumb.
Yeah. All right.
Cool. Okay, keep going.
Next firearm question. What is a long gun?
I would imagine a long gun was what would be normally you called termed a rifle, something with a long barrel.
I think it also includes shotguns. Ken, what do you think? Long gun.
In legalese terms, there might be different definitions, state and federal law. But I would believe it would be, I think it would include shotguns. I think it would include barrel lengths over 16 inches. Which
is a shotgun not a rifle?
No, it's a shotgun.
Yeah, because there's
no
shoot a bullet.
Usually there's no rifling within
that makes sense.
The bore of the firearm. Yeah.
Right. All right.
But some handguns have rifling, correct?
All handguns have rifling on the inside.
Does that make them rifles?
No, it makes them handguns because their barrel lengths are short.
Because you can hold it in one hand.
But the rifling, you brought up, there's no rifling in a shotgun.
Usually shotguns are smooth bore, but they do have...
All right, anyway.
All right, we got Frank on the line. Frank, thanks for calling in.
Hey, thank you much. This recent killing, I think, highlighted the main reason why we have a problem with guns. It's the enforcement. I mean, Cruz should never have been on the street. Well, he shouldn't have ever had all those guns.
He certainly gave him plenty of indications that he was going to go and do something crazy.
And I saw something the other day that there was an analysis of the original shooting from years ago when those kids shot up the school the first time.
Columbine, yeah.
Yeah. There was an analysis that showed those kids were given indications of mental disorder. And then we have this situation with the bump stock. The bump stock should never have been on the market in the first place. Somebody should have been seeing those. I mean, the ATF should have been really analyzing that. And then you have a situation where it's taken 3 years for people to get a trial in a lot of, we have a court system that's not efficient. We have solution or what? I'm
yep.
sorry.
No, I understand exactly what you're saying, Frank.
Murders that are being committed and they're not being a solving rate that's like 30% in a lot of cities.
Yep. No, there's no question. You're absolutely
people out. And yep. so we have a situation also with these kitchen dealers.
Well, what's a kitchen dealer? Let me follow up with you that I do understand exactly what you're saying, Frank, and thank you very much for the call. You know, there is, there's certainly more to the issue, I think what Frank is pointing out, than just guns in terms of violence issue, in terms of our ATF, violence issue.
The ATF did review bump stocks, and under President Obama's controlled ATF, they issued a ruling that said it does not alter a firearm in any mechanical way, so therefore it is totally legal.
My understanding...
Yeah.
And no expert.
We know that.
But
bump stocks.
Well, the bump stocks, I mean, I think the image you get is that you can take an AR-15 or a non-automatic
take
rifle.
A semi-automatic rifle.
Clip this, $5 thing you get off Amazon. Don't actually know if it's all sold on Amazon. I'm assuming not.
It probably was at the time.
Clip it on, and any fool can just, pull that trigger, and it just shoots, 800 rounds in 0.12 seconds. And I don't think that's true. I think even having a bump stock is...
No, actually, I can make a great analogy.
It doesn't make it as simple as that.
I can make a great...
Still takes skill, I believe.
I can make a great analogy, Matt, that you are going to understand. Back in the day, you played those little Olympic video games, right? What was it called? Field and Track 2000 or something like that. We had to press the buttons as fast as you possibly could.
Carpal Tunnel, don't I know? Lillehammer 94. Sega Genesis.
We're actually thinking of an older one than that.
Decathlon on the Atari 2600.
That's exactly what I'm thinking of. But the point is that we learned that you could use a mechanical aid to help you to press the buttons faster. So bump stock is just a mechanical aid that helps you pull the trigger faster on the gun. But the bump stock, that's not the only mechanical aid that can do that. People have manufactured their own iteration of it with just rubber bands. So,
yeah, and I think, and I'm not saying, and I'm not trying to say that maybe bump stock shouldn't be illegal or should be, given to everyone who buys a rifle, but I think there's a misconception, the idea that you snap that thing on. I think people get the idea right. that...
And you even had that on the ABC News sounder that went off before our show.
Right.
Where they said, the bump stock, they want to ban them because it turns a normal rifle into a fully automatic machine gun. That is just not true. And you have ABC News spouting that nonsense before our show.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I just want... more information for people. I want people to, also
if we
go look it up.
If people can learn one thing out of this hour long show, it's that there's a lot more to the gun topic than you realize. And unless you have a real expert, don't listen to what's coming over the news. Don't take Fox's News word for it. Don't take ABC News's word for it. Go talk to somebody who actually knows something about firearms, because there's a tremendous amount of law, a tremendous amount of regulation in place already. The idea that, we have no laws about gun control, right. That's crazy.
But to get back to Frank's point, I thought he made an excellent point, was that there's a reason why a lot of people are saying you can't trust the government to protect you anymore, because the government absolutely failed in their duty to stop this shooter from doing what he did.
Yep.
The FBI was actually, in fact, warned, but had gotten a call 23 times to this guy's house.
Yep.
Twice for concerns that he might shoot up a school.
Yep.
This is an absolute failure of the Broward County Sheriff's Office.
Well, and then the next step, of course, is that there was an armed sheriff officer on duty who failed to enter the building and engage the shooter.
And as a human response, you can say, well, okay, but he either panicked and failed to execute his duty. But even before you get to that point, there are failure points many times before that even occurred.
Yep. So how is – so to some extent, this is one of the things that sort of bothers me about that. I mean, there's obviously going to be more information about this that comes out, and we can, you know, get a better look at this later on in life. But the idea that there was governmental – there was failure on lots of levels, plenty of apparently governmental – by, you know, by governmental agencies and the like. So somehow the solution to prevent that failure is more government action.
Is now to prevent individuals even more from being able to defend
themselves. I mean, to me, there's a logical disconnect in that in general. It's just, you know, it's...
The best argument I ever heard was from a police officer as to why people should own their own guns. And he said, because we're only
minutes... it's tough to borrow from your neighbors when you really need it.
No, he said... because we're only minutes away.
When seconds count, the police officer is minutes away.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it is. And so, you know, Ken's original point, and I'm never going to argue about the hunting stuff again. The point of your gun is to keep you and your family safe. You know, in the talk I gave today, I was down in Connecticut, I talked about Elizabeth Smart, who was abducted out of her house in the middle of the night. If you're a parent and you're raising children and your responsibility is to keep them safe, that's on you. Nobody else gets to tell you how to keep your children safe. There's a phrase that's sometimes used tritely, God made man, but Colonel Colt made him equal. Your ability to defend to protect yourself, to protect your family, no government should get in the way of that. So that's a slightly serious note. I want to talk about what's going to be happening next Saturday in Southie.
It's next Sunday.
Next Sunday. They're not doing it on St. Patrick's Day?
No, they always do it on the Sunday. Generally the Sunday before, but on occasions like now, it's the Sunday after, which means a lot of hungover people at the parade.
Well, so I have marched in the parade once, and actually it ended up being an interesting thing because I marched all the way to Matt's house. Over on 4th Street, and then I got off, and then I...
You stopped. You stopped about halfway through.
You had beer! I had to stop.
Yeah, it was the only house in Southie that had beer.
Exactly. So speaking of parade, and Skippy, I'm sorry we cut you off beforehand, but tell us about your parade plans.
My parade plans, without giving away what I do for a living, I'll be along the route.
Yep.
Put it that way. And I won't be selling balloons.
Interesting.
But I'll tell you what. My personal opinion is people in Southie get mad at me, and I'm from here my whole life.
Yep.
I wish they would do away with it.
Interesting.
It's like a swarm of bees come in. Last year they said they had close to 1 million people.
Yep, that's like, the count I heard too.
It has definitely gotten crazier. I mean, I've been there a long time.
Well, that stretch on Broadway.
And it's like all of a sudden South Boston is like Dodge City, and it is cars triple double parked. God help anybody have a heart attack or a fire engine. Yep. They're going to get there. The police are going to be whatever. But the point is, I love the idea of celebrating, you know, ethnicity or whatever. But first of all, it falls in the middle of lunch, so I would love to see them do a thing called St. Patrick's, St. Bridget's Festival in June. Take over like Castle Island, cut it off. You can control. You want to come in? Buy the alcohol here. It's not all so rampant, and it really gets bad. It really gets bad because people come in like a swarm of bees, as I said. They leave it, and then they're gone, and we're left with it. You know what?
That's an outstanding.
That's right, but
point.
I want to make another point about the parade, which actually ties into our conversation.
Yep.
It's not just a St. Patrick's Day parade. It started as what's known as Evacuation Day, which was a celebration of the American Revolution when the British left Boston on March 17th, which is St. Patrick's Day, and that's...
Yeah, but don't you think there was a little bit of convenience there? They needed a reason to have St. Patrick's Day holiday?
No, but it's also, I mean, most of that celebration is mostly for sort of military. There is St. Patrick and stuff like that. I think it is the oldest, but it is an evacuation day. I mean, it's St. Patrick's Day, but which is one of the, you know, the main things they celebrate is just, it's just sort of generic, basic,
I want to
bring up the military.
I want to bring up a quick Fourth Amendment issue that happens along the parade route. So back in the day when we first started, we would just openly drink along the street. In recent years, the police have put a stop to that. And so, you know, some people have brought beer and Dunkin' Donut cups. Last time we were there, a police officer came by and asked to see what was in our cup.
Yeah.
If that happens this time, I'm going to refuse. I don't think there's any probable cause to see what's in my cup.
Well, that's why he just asked you.
Yeah, exactly. So
but it'll be interesting. A lot of people will just give in to authority.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't want to do it to be a jerk.
Yeah.
I'll be as polite as I can about it, but I'll say, you know, officer.
But hey, I want people to come where I am, where I live. It's not as crazy. I know the Broadway stuff is.
Yeah.
But I want people to have a good time and sort of celebrate and be honest and also celebrate the fact that, you know, that was the end of the revolution that gave us these rights that you get to talk about. Here on the radio. I hope we get to continue to do it.
It would be a wonderful thing. I am, every time I go to the Southie Parade, you know, there's all these political concerns about it. But every time I get there, I love the camaraderie of Boston. I love the fact that we have our servicemen climbing in and out of the city, coming into the city, marching. We have marching bands from all over the place. It's a celebration of everything that's wonderful about Boston, about the merging of our cultures. And so if you're along the parade route, if you're marching in the parade, you'll see me there waving down on 4th Street, and look forward to all of us having a wonderful, peaceful time, and we'll be talking with you a week from now.